This is a republic if you can keep it, with former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer and former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer.
I'm Jeff Timmer. Welcome to It's Almost Voting Time edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It. Absentee ballots go out in the mail in just 2 weeks. In Michigan, the attention in the massive ad spending is split between candidate races and two very high-profile ballot proposals. We'll be talking both candidates and ballot proposals later in the podcast with Lavora Barnes, the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party.
I'm Mark Brewer. This week on the podcast, President Biden makes his sixth visit to Michigan as president, with another Trump visit to Michigan, Macomb County, in 2 weeks. Michigan's battle over reproductive health care rights is getting the attention of the entire nation. And we have a surprising retirement from the Michigan Supreme Court. But we begin with an exclusive interview with one of the key members of the newly formed Republicans for Whitmer, a group of former top GOP leaders shunning right-wing big lie booster Tudor Dixon in favor of re-electing Gretchen Whitmer. It's my pleasure to interview one of the most important names attached to Republicans for Whitmer, Jeff Timmer.
Thanks for having me on the show, Mark. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. So, Jeff, you were part of this effort in 2018, if I recall correctly, right?
No, I actually wasn't. I was still kind of under the radar in 2018. I had been public on social media with my criticism of Trump and the Republicans and where I thought the party was going. But it wasn't until even after the 2018 election that I admitted that I had actually voted for Gretchen Whitmer and Jocelyn Benson and Dana Nessel that I had become so disenchanted with the direction of the Republican Party, I could not bring myself to vote for them. So this is my first time on the list of Republicans for Whitmer. And there's a very good list. The people on there are some very important names. To see people like Doug and Sharon Rothwell and how close they were and what key players of the John Engler administration they were. Donors on there, the key Bill Parfet and Sid Jansma Jr. are two names on there. And there's others. I know I'm going to leave lots of people out here, but those are two major donors, people who've given hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, to the Republican Party, to Republican Party candidates and causes. Bill Parfet was the fundraising chairman for Rick Snyder during his entire run for governor. He was somebody who was reluctant in 2020 to join the Republicans for Biden effort. But everybody has their point and their line in the sand. And Gretchen Whitmer, Tudor Dixon, the January 6th, everything. Bill, I was very pleased to see somebody of his caliber on there. And so people like Bob LeBrant, that's not a surprise. We've had Bob on the show. He's talked about how he's become disenchanted. But there were several former legislators, Tory Rocca from Macomb County, a very recent Republican state senator from the heart of Macomb County. I thought that was a very telling. There's never going to be massive numbers who go against the party. But this is creating that permission structure, telling other disenchanted, Republicans who actually like the rule of law and democracy and the Constitution and those things, it's okay to vote for a Democrat, because that's the only place you're going to find respect for those things.
If I can, Jeff, what does the group plan to do? You had a great press rollout the other day, got a lot of publicity. This group is bigger than it was in 2018 with the addition of you and others. Are there plans for this group in terms of its activities going forward?
Just yesterday, there was full page ads in the Detroit Free Press and News, kind of an open letter from the group to other Republicans. I think we're going to see lots of media related activity, earned media related activity, op-eds, appearances on radio talk shows, on podcasts and other streaming sites. Where people are more and more getting their news rather than from the traditional incumbent sources of news. And so I think we're going to see a lot of bipartisan support for not just Gretchen Whitmer, but I think we're going to see some more people coming out for other Democrats. Like I said, this is a pro-democracy. This isn't a not that there's anything wrong with voting for a Democrat, but for a lot of Republicans who have been conditioned, you know, as part of their DNA to not vote for Democrats, having been there myself in the voting booth in 2018, it was a moment, and it's a moment I'll never forget. And so we've got to help others get past that moment. But there's people who are going to be voting for Alyssa Slotkin, who are Republicans. They're going to be voting for Jocelyn Benson and Dana Nessel, other Democrats around the state. Hillary Scolton is since the press conference earlier in the week on the Whitmer team, I've had people reach out to me and say, hey, we want to organize a Republicans for Scolton. We even supported Pete Meyer in the primary, but there's no way we're going to support this MAGA goon who's parachuted into West Michigan. We're not going to send him to Washington. We think Hillary Scolton is the best choice for Congress. And so it's already paying benefits.
But Jeff, you've been very, very active and one of the leaders of the Lincoln Project, which has done a lot of great work, fabulous ads you all have produced, very cutting, good stuff. And so you're a keen observer of what's going on around the country in addition to Michigan. Have you seen these kind of efforts among Republicans in other states as well?
Yes, and this is it's an organized effort that's, well, organized organically within the states. There's nobody nationally out there seeding this. But in Pennsylvania, for example, there are Republicans for Shapiro, who's running for governor, the attorney general running for governor as the Democratic candidate against election denier, January 6th participant Doug Mastriano. And there's several former members of Congress, the legislature, some very prominent names in Pennsylvania. In Arizona, you have the same thing. Republicans for Katie Hobbs and for Mark Kelly. They're people who are look at a candidate like Carrie Lake in Arizona or Doug Mastriano or Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania and think, this is not the party. These people do not represent the ideals. They don't even represent the decency or adherence, fidelity to the Constitution and the rule of law. If they can't clear that simple low hurdle of saying, do you respect the law and the Constitution? Will you abide by the results of elections? That's a disqualifier for people. And the market is dictating this here. They're saying, I can't buy the Republican brand anymore that I used to buy. The formula has changed. I need to switch products here. And it's, going out and shopping for that new product. Well, there's only one other product on the market if they want to be viable, and that's choosing the Democratic candidate. I think we're going to see, I think that's driving a lot of what we have seen in the shift in polls over these last months, starting kind of precipitated by the Dobbs ruling overturning Roe. But now, as these primaries have now concluded across the country, and Republicans are looking at this extremely radical group of candidates. New Hampshire this week is another great example. Trump didn't endorse in any of those races, and the Republican voters in New Hampshire picked the craziest of the crazies to be their candidates for U.S. Senate and for the two competitive House seats in New Hampshire. And it really just shows that the party, as I've said before, has lost its goddamn mind.
Yeah, I think also too, Jeff, if I may, you're right. This gives permission for people to publicly say, I'm not going to vote Republican this time. I may even vote for a Democrat. But it seems to me, and you and I have been longtime party insiders, that this also ties in with what we've seen in terms of the poor fundraising by Dixon, Caramo, and DiPerno, at least based on the public reports. I mean, if you've got prominent donors like Parfait saying, I am publicly for Whitmer now, it doesn't mean he's going to give her money, but it probably means he's not giving money to the Republican Party either. And I suspect that may be just the tip of the iceberg that there may be other, and there are other Republican donors who, while they may not be able to say publicly or be comfortable saying publicly, I'm going to vote for Whitmer, they're not going to finance these Republican candidates. Is that your sense as well?
Absolutely. And I think that the proof of that is in the fundraising reports. It's certainly those candidates, when you mentioned they're poor fundraisers, I was, they're almost non-existent fundraisers. They have really no money. It's astounding how little money they have. I mean, none of them have reached the threshold of even a legitimate statewide candidate. They couldn't even begin to conduct the advertising on broadcast or on digital, and have the kind of organizational structure in the state that a campaign would have. They can't even meet the bare minimum requirements. But the party itself, the Republican Party's fundraising, is lagging far behind previous election cycles. That's evident in the reports. And they've taken on significant debt earlier than they have before. And a lot of that debt is directly from loans from the chairman, Ron Weiser, who seems to be effectively funding the Republican efforts out of his own pocket, because he's lost donors who he's been able to rely on in the past, like Bill Parfet, like Sid Jansma Jr., like so many others who either are giving to Gretchen Whitmer and Democratic organizations, or are just sitting this one out. And they might not be public about who they're voting, but they're not going to be funding these Republican candidates. They're not going to be voting for these Republican candidates. And that right there is a loss for the Republicans. Now, if they go so far as to contribute or vote for the Democrat, that's like almost a twofer. It's one away from the Republican column and one in the Democrat column, as opposed to just one subtracted from the Republicans.
Right. And as we both know, there are ample mechanisms, means, for those Republican donors to give money darkly, right, without disclosure to the Democrats or to Whitmer, or at least to organizations that would support both of them, so that they don't have to risk any public disclosure if that's a route they choose to go. And that, you know, plays into what you just described. I noticed that there are some, we're starting to see a smattering of third party ads in the governor's race. There's one I think I saw that's out now. It's attacking people as Democrats as groomers by this, you know, fringe group out there, and some others. But again, no sign of the DeVos's yet, right? Am I missing something? Here we are. What?
No.
6 weeks now from the election, maybe seven-ish, and no sign of any DeVos money, right?
There hasn't been. Watching the advance reservations of ads in the state, Right to Life in Michigan had booked more than $20 million of advance ad placement. And it's I guess we must assume that a lot of that placement at this point was going to go into the ballot proposal campaign, or be advertising on against the Reproductive Rights Act. But they've pulled more than 14 million, or canceled, never fulfilled 14 million of that. It's so I'm trying to figure out that was new information that was given to me today. I'm trying to figure out exactly what that means. Maybe there's some reporters out there listening to this who are on the story watching the money going around, and we'll see something about this. But this is we're now at about a little over 50 days until the election. We're 2 weeks away from absentee ballots and early voting starting. This is when reporters would typically be looking at those ad reservations. This is when the money really starts to turn on and actually spend. Now's when the pedal hits the metal, and you either pay for that time you reserved ahead of time,
right,
or you forfeit that time, and they canceled the reservation. So the reservations are kind of a sometimes done as a strategic bluster, sometimes a head fake to send a signal. And then when it comes to actually sending the money to the TV stations, that's a whole different ballgame. And so that's now going to be, as we watch the money move around the chessboard in Michigan and in other states, I'm watching money going around between the Republicans are canceling tons of money in states like Pennsylvania, in the the entities around Mitch McConnell in the Senate are pulling money out of Pennsylvania. The Governor's Association has not put any money into Pennsylvania. They seem to be putting money now, shifting it into Arizona and into Nevada. But now we're seeing Republican resources move into states like Florida. That has become much more competitive than they had hoped it would be. They're having to play more defense. They had hoped to be on offense, but now they're playing defense. That's a real sign that the tide is changing and we're at least back at a neutral. But I think it's starting to really be a slight tilt toward the Democrats in the way the wind is blowing in the macro environment in this election.
Right. Well, I know in terms of the abortion piece, I know that up in the 8th Congressional District, Dan Kildee is up with an ad attacking his Republican opponent for being anti-choice. We continue to see the DGA ads attacking Dixon on choice. And I know the Reproductive Freedom Ballot Question Committee that supports the proposal is also on the air. So I think we're going to see a lot of this abortion advertising. It may not be the biggest source of advertising, but it's going to be a large one. And I think it's going to permeate a lot of these state and federal races as we could continue to see Republican candidates actually run away from it. You know, I also know that though the Catholic Church isn't going to just sit back and let Proposal 3 pass. They're doing a lot of internal work, as they always do, on a ballot proposal that affects them. But, you know, regardless of how effective that is, it can only go so far, right? Yeah, you need to be able to communicate via social media, broadcast media and radio, your message, if you think you have one, against particularly Proposal 3. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens over the next weeks. I can tell you that on the litigation front, you know, we had Judge Gleischer's terrific decision last week, now issuing a permanent statewide injunction against the enforcement of Michigan's criminal abortion ban. It's been very quiet on the litigation front. No, you know, urgent effort to appeal what Judge Cunningham did in Oakland County a few weeks ago, where he enjoined its enforcement in 13 counties. We've seen nothing yet trying to overturn Judge Gleischer's opinion here. Yeah, we can only speculate about what role that may be playing. It seems to me, if you're the Republicans, actually, you don't want further controversy about abortion. They're already trying to run away from it. And it seems to me any further controversy or litigation or publicity about it just makes it tougher for them. You know, and who knows? Maybe there's some monetary problems there in terms of can they even find the resources to go on the air, given that they canceled over $10 million worth of ads. It's a fascinating game here. I mean, obviously, the election's not over. You know, we're still 7 weeks out. You know, there could be a big rush of resources and so forth. But the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking, and it's not like you could wait till October or late October, as both political parties used to do, with these ballots going out early. People will be making their decisions and casting those ballots early. We may have half the vote in this state cast by absentee. Now, that won't happen immediately in the next 2 weeks, but people are going to start to vote. And if folks want to have their presence known, they got to see it. I did note that there was the I saw a Whitmer ad during the U of M football game last Saturday. I happened to catch that. I don't know if that's the beginning for her of a sustained ad effort, but I thought that was a smart move to get that audience during the football game.
Yeah, I think, I mean, now I would be I would suspect that the Whitmer campaign is up to stay through the election. They will probably be increasing the frequency and size of their buys each week as we go forward. There was a new ad by the DGA in the governor's race on behalf of Whitmer, linking Tudor Dixon to Betsy DeVos that I've seen this week. They're still running their Tudor Dixon extreme on abortion ad, but they're now rotating in an ad showing Betsy DeVos and Tudor Dixon side by side and talking about public education. And that is, I think, reflective of the fact I saw some polling this week that Betsy DeVos is incredibly unpopular across Michigan, extremely well known for somebody who's never held office before. I mean, she is almost universally known, and her favorable, unfavorable is so underwater, and it's even underwater with Republicans. She has an unfavorable, a net unfavorable among Republicans. And so the strategy here is clearly to help drive that wedge between Tudor Dixon and Republicans. And Tudor Dixon is doing everything she can to try to change with no money. I shouldn't say doing everything she can. She's running a shitty, almost invisible campaign to date. But they held a press conference earlier in the week trying to talk about a new tough on crime initiative that I wanted to mention here because I thought it was optically so poor that it was about how she wants to spend $1 billion to bring more police onto Michigan streets. Missing from the optics of the press conference and missing from even the comments in the press conference were statements or the presence of any law enforcement. There were none. It was a bunch of white Republican guy politicians standing behind her at this event. It was just, I think, a complete and utter failure from a campaign practitioner standpoint that they would roll out an initiative like that and do it so poorly.
Yeah, and the governor's been no slouch on that issue. There's been a lot of funding and a wide variety of efforts that she has made, which is good policy, obviously, but also good politics to help insulate yourself from those kinds of soft on crime, defund the police kind of attacks. I mean, I just don't think that's an attack that's going to fly. Even though, Tudor Dixon took a few shots at Whitmer in that regard during that event. But that wasn't the major thrust of it. You're right, Jeff. I was also puzzled by the lack of uniform police officers and leaders of police organizations in the state, praising her, praising this plan, et cetera. It was just very odd. Very odd, and I don't know, maybe even a one-off, because we haven't seen any of that or her since. It's very, very strange what's going on there. And we still are having the debate over debates, right? They've not agreed, I don't think, to any debates yet. And again, the clock is ticking.
Yeah, it is. I think they may have agreed to now one debate, kind of later in October. Ah. But there might be still squabbling about different debates. Christina Caramo is refusing to debate Jocelyn Benson.
Right.
We've talked about the obstacles between Dana Nessel debating Matt DiPerno, and those obstacles are the fact that a special prosecutor has been appointed to investigate his criminal activity and how that would handcuff Dana Nessel and put her in a professional and politically untenable position should she walk into a debate. I can't talk about that. That's not a good strategy in a debate, is to be able to not answer your opponent's charges. So I know I know our guest will be on here shortly. If we could make sure that we plug our merch store, a Republic, if you can keep it, podcast merch store, get your Republicans for Sanity coffee mug. See what else is there. So please go visit that on our website.
And not a penny of that goes to Jeff or I or our producer. It goes to pay the costs of this podcast every week. So, yeah, help us out, friends. We'd really appreciate that. Well, Jeff, if we can, squeeze in one more topic before we turn to the board. There's been a big announcement on the Supreme Court in Michigan this week with the surprise retirement of the Chief Justice, first elected back in 2012, reelected in 2020 by a comfortable margin, done a great job as a justice and as chief in terms of a number of the initiatives that have gone there. But she announced that she's going to retire before the end of the year. And we've since learned that she's going to become head of a large international and national arbitration association in the private sector. But again, that's, again, a big surprise there. and will give Governor Whitmer the opportunity to make her first appointment to the Michigan Supreme Court later this year.
Yeah, I think that's certainly it took everybody by surprise. Chief Justice McCormick has been quietly behind the scenes a very powerful force in Michigan politics and steering that court in a direction, maintaining collegiality and compromise over a period of turmoil in politics. And I think you would, even though in the last couple of years, especially the Republican nominated justices Viviano and Zara have often been dissenting from the majority opinions, I think they would still say great things about Bridget McCormick as a person and as the leader of that court. I've yet to find anybody who has anything bad to say about her. I certainly understand this isn't the first time that we've had somebody leave the Supreme Court for the private sector. Conrad Mallett, Mary Beth Kelly a few years ago. There have been others who, kind of were caught people by surprise. But, 10 years on the court is a long time. She's still young and has a big professional career ahead of her, and I wish her the best.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be interesting to see now what Governor Whitmer does. I'm sure there are a lot of candidates interested in that appointment. They'll have to run for re-election themselves in just 2 years. For the balance of the term. So that, I think, will be a factor as well. But yes, we could see a little bit of a turnover in terms of the composition of the Michigan Supreme Court starting in 2023.
If Kira Bolden loses to Brian Zara, if Brian Zara is reelected and Kira Bolden doesn't get elected, I would think that she is almost a guarantee to be appointed. That's just my own observation, my own opinion. I'm not betraying any confidences there.
Mark and Jeff will be joined by Michigan Democratic Party Chair Lavora Barnes after these messages on A Republic, If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than 4 decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress, to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
When candidates and government leaders need the facts about their voters, they turn to practical political consulting.
PPC has served political candidates, organizations, campaigns, and businesses for more than 45 years. They work with savvy campaigns to provide the best voter lists available in Michigan, as well as campaign consulting, graphic design, and polling at competitive prices.
Over their storied history, PPC has worked with thousands of campaigns, providing them with, as the New York Times once said, quote, the best lists possible in this competitive state, along with unique and individualized strategy.
They've worked with small campaigns for rural school board, all the way up to occupants of the White House. They are also renowned for their work with ballot initiatives, both for challenges and protections.
Find out more. Go to www.practicalpoliticalconsulting.com or call 517-351-5105.
Show your support for preserving our republic at the A Republic If You Can Keep It merch store. We've got t-shirts and coffee mugs made to order for lovers of our representative democracy. Just go to our website, arepublicpodcast.com, and click on the merch store button. You aren't fully dressed until you have Ben Franklin on your chest. It's the perfect gift for that democracy lover in your life.
Joining the conversation this week is the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, Lavora Barnes. One thing I learned in my nearly 2 decades in that job It can be both the most rewarding and frustrating job in Michigan politics, and Lavora has excelled in that very difficult position. She was first elected in February 2019, and she's the first Black woman to hold that post. Prior to being elected chair, she was the chief operating officer for the MDP, a post she held since 2015. She's a political veteran with extensive experience in field communications and fundraising, and she's also, while at the party, implemented and grown a year-round full-time organizing strategy in every corner of Michigan. She's the chief architect of MDP's Project 83, which was started in 2017, which is the blueprint for a successful organizing model now being adopted by states around the country following her leadership.
Mark isn't the only former MDP chair singing the praises of Lavora. Former chair Brandon Dillon said, quote, "If you want to talk, you can call anyone. If you want to win, you call Lavora." And as someone who helped lead the other major party, I'm also a fan of her work. She does a great job. Lavora is a graduate of the College of William and Mary in Virginia, born in North Carolina. Her family moved to Virginia, where she spent the majority of her childhood. The mother of three, Barnes lives with her family in Ann Arbor.
Well, Lavora, welcome to our podcast. Great to see you, and thank you for taking the time in the middle of what's an incredibly busy time for you. So I'm just going to ask, how's it going?
It's going well, Mark. It's going well. I have to say, on some days, it feels like an embarrassment of riches. The Republicans just keep giving it to us. And our communications team is very busy and a little bit overwhelmed with all of it. But it's going well. But, you know, I said to somebody earlier today, we run through the finish line and we take nothing for granted. So while folks are out there, you know, starting to cheer that this feels good, it might feel good, but it's not good until it's finished. And so we're going to continue to work hard and remind people who these Republicans are and, frankly, who our Dems are and the difference. So busy, but good.
Yeah. Well, we've had some, you know, obviously Michigan is very pivotal in elections across the country and control of things in Congress and the direction of the country and the Electoral College after the 2024 election. We had President Biden here yesterday, just announced today Donald Trump is going to be back in Michigan and in Macomb County on October 1st. What are your reactions to the Biden visit yesterday and kind of foreshadow your reaction and what we might expect to see with Donald Trump here in 2 weeks?
I love having President Biden back in the state. You know, he spends enough time here that he is a son of Michigan. We love him here. I love that every time he gets here, he does a terrific job of pointing out our friends in labor. You know, he doesn't miss an opportunity to talk about the importance of labor in the state and of the auto industry. I think it was great that he was here. I think it's kind of funny that there was at least one headline about him holding hands with our governor. I'm not quite sure that that's the headline I would have written about the visit of the president of the United States, but that's interesting. And, you know, Trump keeps coming back. You know, he came back over and over again. You know, he's comfortable in Macomb County. You know, he may spend more time there than John James does. So
that's a pretty low bar, Lavora.
It is indeed the lowest possible bar.
I've spent more time there than John James.
We all have. So, you know, I'm not surprised that he's coming back. You know, we've got some of those ultra MAGA Republicans on this ballot, and he's got to get here to try to support them and try to drag them over a finish line. But they've got some huge hurdles along the way, because the people of Michigan know who they are. They recognize who they are and what they stand for, and it's not what Michiganders stand for. So he can come back and remind folks of that all he wants.
Yeah, it just seems really odd to me, frankly, that they would want to be there. Right. But well, we've seen that, Lavora, right? We kept waiting and waiting for the pivot to the center by Dixon, Caramo, and DiPerno after their convention or after their primary or whenever. But it hasn't happened.
Nope.
And now they're going to associate themselves with this incredibly polarizing, alienating figure. I'm not even sure about, I live in Macomb. He's holding the rally in Warren. I mean, I know this is a media event. It's, you know, right. But, you know, that's the more Democratic part of the county still this day. But to me, it's really odd that he's doing it there as opposed to the northern part of the county. So we just have to see. I like you. Come back as often as you want. Embrace all these candidates and hopefully pay the price come election day.
I believe they will. And it's funny to me because I think, you know, we have all seen in previous elections where people figure out that they need to distance themselves from the polarizing figure in their party. It happens on our side too. But these folks have not figured it out or don't care or are seeing something in the tea leaves that Christina Caramo won't let us read because that would be, you know, devilish. But they're seeing, I don't know what they could possibly be seeing that makes them think that they should be wrapping their arms around Donald Trump right now. But here they are doing it.
Yeah. I think it's just it's evident of the alternative reality and alternative worldview that the Republican candidates live in. They just have a completely different they see different visible light spectrum than other people. You know, it's either they're sane and everybody else is crazy, or they're crazy and everybody else is sane. And I think I know the answer to that.
Yeah, I think we all know the answer to that.
But this doesn't, I can't imagine. I can't imagine, because I know some of the people involved in the high levels of the Dixon world, and they're not dumb campaign operatives. They have to be like sucking down the Maalox today once they see that Donald, they knew it was likely to happen. They were hoping somehow it wouldn't. They're trying to think of, you know, can we come up with a scheduling kind of, was that today? Sorry, we can't be there. But they know whether she's there or not is a conundrum. If she's not there, then that becomes a huge deal. If she is there, that becomes a huge deal. It's a no-win situation for them. They know that. You know, I'm still not even convinced, and I've said this on Twitter, I'm not convinced that Tudor Dixon is even a real person. I think we might all be getting catfished, and she's this AI invention. I don't think anybody's ever seen Tudor Dixon in the wild. So at some point, she's going to have to show her face in public in front of people. This might be it.
This will be the moment. Jeff should be standing next to Donald Trump. This is the
she's
going to
be trying
real.
To hide behind him and let Matt DiPerno and Christina Caramo stand out there in front, because those two are completely crazy. They will recognize, they'll be out there being Trumpier than Trump. She's at least, she's crazy, but she's wary and she's trying to be clever because she's one who is kind of pulled back a little bit, just a little bit on what she is saying about Trump, about the 2020 election. Now she's trying to pivot away from abortion, saying, oh, you know, nobody cares about that anymore. Yeah. They care about what I want to talk about, even though I have no money. Let's talk about that.
No, you're seeing a lot of this, you know, as they try to roll back on their positions and scrub their Facebook pages and their websites and pretend like they didn't say all the things that we have them on record saying. I can see her doing that as well. But in the end, you know, we all heard it. We've all read it. We've got copies of it. We know it's out there, and we're going to make sure that the voters see it over and over again.
Oh, and so will Donald Trump talk about, you know, Tudor Dixon and Christina Caramo and Matt DiPerno. He's going to make sure everybody knows it. I think that you said an embarrassment of riches. I would much rather be Gretchen Whitmer and Jocelyn Benson and Dana Nessel and all the other Democrats in these competitive races right now than the Republicans. But the Republicans have a chance to win.
Yes, they do.
All of these races, some of these races, to think that the, you know, running the table is going to be a hard thing. Yeah. They're so crazy that it's almost hard for sane people to take them serious.
Well, that's exactly right, Jeff. That's what I was going to say. Like, I have had conversations with folks about what's going on here in Michigan, and I can see on their face that they don't think that I've got it quite right. Mm-hmm. And it's because it all sounds so crazy that you can't quite get folks, sane folks, to understand that someone who wants to be governor or attorney general or secretary of state has said the things that these folks have said, believed the things that these folks believe. And it's so tough for our candidates to run against crazy. I mean, how do you run against crazy when you're not crazy? So I think that our folks are doing a great job. You know, the governor's doing a great job reminding folks of the work that she has done, the work that she will continue to do on behalf of the state. I mean, you can just, you know, take a look at what's happened with our elections, if you believe the truth, which I do, and you can see why Jocelyn Benson needs to continue being our Secretary of State, the best Secretary of State in the country. So Dana Nessel, who's not afraid of anything or anybody, should absolutely continue to be Attorney General. But it's so hard for all of them. I mean, poor Dana I mean, she's running against somebody that she ought to be prosecuting, frankly, right? So how does she do both of those things at the same time? They are in really tough spots as candidates, and we're trying our best here at the party to step up and help do that communication for them. But it's tough to run against crazy.
Yeah, if you made a list of the roughly 10 million people in Michigan, Christina Caramo wouldn't even be on the list of people who are qualified to be Secretary of State. And Matt DiPerno wouldn't be on the list of people who are there are 10 million people more qualified than those people. But because we're in such a highly partisan, so it's such a politically charged atmosphere, these elections are going to be close. And so we see some polls, some public polls that are out there showing some wider spreads. You know, we saw Gretchen Whitmer up 13, Jocelyn Benson up 11. I know internal polling in these campaigns, and they're out there saying, no, our internal polling is much closer than that. Don't be lulled into complacency by these polls that you're seeing in the Detroit News and Free Press. Be worried, be alarmed, get out there and campaign like we're behind, campaign confidently, campaign with enthusiasm and optimism, but by God, campaign. Let's save democracy. We've got a chance. We've got a chance to not only elect the statewide ticket, but also the state legislature and change control of one or both of those chambers.
And take nothing and take no voter for granted, right? Which is why, you know, we're out there making sure we're talking to voters, not just once, not just twice, but, you know, multiple times to remind them of the importance of this election and remind them of the importance of electing Democrats, small D Democrats who also happen to be big D Democrats in November.
LaVar, you built a tremendous grassroots organization with Project 83 at the party. And you've been and your staff have led, and there's volunteers involved as well, obviously, canvassing. I get solicited to go canvass all the time for a variety of groups. Yeah, no, so they're on it. So I'm just curious, you know, you've long had your pulse on that back when you and I first met each other and worked with each other on the state house campaigns back in the early 2000s. Well, what are your people hearing out there? And you get out there too. You go out and visit the local parties and so forth. What are you hearing from the grassroots Democrats? Are they enthusiastic? Are they excited about this? Or what's the mood out there?
They are enthusiastic and excited, Mark. And here's the thing. The tide turned when they struck down Roe. You know, people were fired up to support the governor, but I think they realized the importance of this election when Roe was struck down. When Dobbs happened, people sort of woke up and said, wait, the thing that we've always in the back of our mind hoped wouldn't happen is actually real now. So people are fired up. They're fired up about that. They're fired up about protecting their electoral rights. They're fired up about all of their freedoms that they feel are under threat. So when we're out there talking to the voters, right now, first thing we usually hear, particularly if we're talking to women, is abortion. But coming right behind that on the heels is the economy. We still talk about the economy. It's the economy, stupid. Always will be. And I think, you know, folks are noticing that gas prices are going down, but Republicans are still talking about gas prices like they are still going up. But we talk about the economy. And then you're going to love it. And it's not going to surprise you, Mark, because, you know, people still want to talk about water. People still want to talk about the environment. They still want to talk about infrastructure. Fixing those damn roads, right? And, you know, they'll point to the road that's being fixed right now and say, thanks, Big Gretch, for fixing my roads. It's good out there. The volunteers are fired up. We've got thousands of folks on tap to do a weekend of action this weekend again. It's going really well, and people are really excited to get to work and save democracy.
What's your sense of the level of absentee voting we're going to see? I mean, we had this great Proposal 3 adopted in 2018, combined with COVID, you know, huge absentee turnout in 2020. That's obviously cooled off a little bit in terms of the pandemic. But it looks to me like absentee voting is going to continue to be very, very popular. What do you think? 50, 60% of the vote, AV?
I think you're right about that, Mark. And I'm looking at 50 in my head. I think it's going to be about half the vote. Is AV, which is why I tell all of our candidates that you can't wait till election day. Get out there now and start having these conversations, because as soon as these ballots hit, people start voting. I do think that this right is the one, like, we taught them how to use it during COVID and they're still using it. And I think people are finding it a convenient way to vote. And we have all had to sort of remaster the way we think about and talk about GOTV now, because election day starts the day those ballots drop, because so many of our folks will be using them. And you both know that part of the hard work we have to do is educating them not just vote, but how to vote. Like, go find the nonpartisan section of your ballot and vote for Bernstein and Bolden. So we're having to have those conversations with folks early and often to make sure that they get that message before they've got the ballot in their hand.
It looks like we're going to have two very well-funded ballot proposals.
Yes.
I'm not sure about the term limits. What's going to happen there? But I think, in terms of promote the vote and the reproductive freedom proposal, I think that the latter one's on the air already, I believe. Looks like we're going to have two very well-funded proposals there. Is there synergy there with what the party is doing? I know you've endorsed both of them.
We have.
How's that working out?
We've endorsed both of them. Our volunteers want to volunteer for both of them. They want to talk about them when they're at the doors. And we're absolutely encouraging our volunteers to have those conversations with voters while they're talking about the importance of voting for our candidates. We even put the ballot measures on our walklet so that people would have that information right in their hand as they had the information about our candidates. It's important to us that we protect those rights. And it's important to our members and to all of our voters. So we're making sure that we're talking about it as much as we can while also talking about our candidates. It's a long list of things to talk about, though. It's a good long door, right, to have that full conversation with the voter.
Right.
Well, we learned the hard way after the 2020 election. There's something new that people involved in campaigns and political parties now need to add to the list of things we do during an election, and now that is preserve the outcome of the election afterward. On November 9th, now we will start the Republican effort to overturn or deny any races that they lose, especially any races that are close. But even it doesn't have to be close, as we found in Michigan.
Right.
Joe Biden won by a massive amount, yet the Republicans are still yapping about that. But it adds not only to the work and what is involved in the cost of elections, but it goes further than that. And there's like a deliberate effort to undermine the faith in the elections, yeah, in the legitimacy of those who are elected. And so that's something that has to be factored in as well, that even, when Gretchen Whitmer, I think it is a win, when she wins re-election, when Jocelyn Benson, when Dana Nessel, if the Democrats take control of the legislature, the Republicans are not going to stop and say, okay, we really did something wrong. We've suffered a defeat. We need to regroup and look at what we did wrong and learn how to rebuild the party. And they've learned all the wrong lessons. They're going to get out there and make noise that it was stolen, that it was robbed in advance of the 2024 election to whip their minority of voters in Michigan into a hyper frenzy. So they will maybe punch above their weight again in 2024. I know that's the Republican strategy. I know we're going to see that beginning on November 9th.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because the fact that I have had to build an entire team of folks that we call voter protection that works year round here at the party says a lot about where we've gone in terms of how we have to fight for each and every vote and for each and every vote to be counted and protected. And that work doesn't end. Like, I don't get to let them go after election day. They have to stay because we have to continue to work through. I mean, you all watch, like, 2020 didn't end until 2020. It still hasn't ended for some people.
It still hasn't ended. Yeah,
exactly. It just keeps going. So, we've got to be prepared to just keep going, which means, the bevy of attorneys who are our voter protection team, the bevy of attorneys all around the state, people like Mark who are ready to go when we need people to go, right? We have to have so much of that we just didn't think about. Like, when I was the first doing this work, election day meant election day. It was done. You won and then you went and you legislated. And now you win and then you have to fight to prove that you won. And then people are going to continue to say that you didn't win. And then they might actually storm the Capitol.
Like, I mean, the changes are just remarkable. LeVar, back in the 80s, I started passing law. The Michigan Democratic Party's election protection program consists of me and Ted Sachs, my mentor, fabulous lawyer.
Yeah.
Basically, we're sitting in our office on election day waiting to be called if there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we needed. But that was the 80s, and this is now. Nobody used to know who these county canvassing boards were. They didn't know what the state canvassing board was that Jeff sat on. They were sleepy meetings nobody ever attended. Now, oh my gosh, everybody's focused on these boards. Yeah. It's gotten out of control.
I was both a county canvasser and a state canvasser. Wow. And I can't even tell you what I did.
Yeah, the elections are never over. I still got litigation from the 2020 election ongoing. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm trying to overturn anything. And we still got a lawsuit, you know, filed just recently, as you know about, where, again, let's decertify the 2020 election. 2 years later.
2 years it, later.
Yeah. Just doesn't later. Matter.
Right.
We had Jim Blanchard on a couple weeks ago on this podcast, and I talked to him about decertifying the 1990 election. he lost that unexpectedly.
That's funny, Jeff.
Well, hey, Lavora, I've got a completely different topic. I just got to ask about it. Right. You know, if you can't talk about it, we understand. We know there's been a lot of debate at the DNC about the order in which states get to vote. And I know you and others have been leading the charge to try to get Michigan in the mix. Can you give us an update about where that is?
Yes. Well, I can give you an update, which is that the Rules and Bylaws Committee had planned to make a decision and bring it to the DNC that met last week, early September. What they decided to do instead was to wait until after the November election to make that recommendation about the states. So we're all on hold until after the election. So they've already moved forward with the call to convention and some of the rules around the convention, but they don't have that convention calendar or those states chosen yet. I think that they will choose five, I'm going to say, of us, because I have faith that Michigan will be one of them, to go early, and then they'll determine that order. And I've always said, I don't need to be first.
Right.
I just want us to be early. And I think it means so much to the process of electing a president for these candidates to spend time early in states that look like this country. And there is not a better example of that than Michigan. We've got everything. We've got urban. We've got rural. We've got military. We've got a strong labor presence. We've got almost every ethnic group you can imagine. We speak so many languages. Michigan has it all. So I do believe that we will end up in that early five, but we won't know until post-election.
Yeah, no, I think it'd be great. We don't have to be first, you know. Yeah. But if we can have, they have the first four, and we can be like the gateway then to Super Tuesday.
Exactly.
I think that would be fabulous and perfect spot for Michigan to be
in. Yes, I agree. I agree completely. But we'll see what they do.
Well, we're 55 days away from election day, which means we're 56 days away from the start of the 2024 campaign. It is not too early to be talking about these things. A lot of people are listening to this going, I can't even start to think about that now, but it's going, eight, 7 weeks here, it starts.
It's funny, Jeff. I think because people who aren't as inside as we have all been or are don't realize how much work it goes into the process of getting ready to choose our nominee for president, all the way from, you know, preparing for primaries all over the country to things like selecting the delegates to the convention or choosing location for the convention. All of that work has to start early, start now, frankly. It's sort of a never ending cycle.
Yeah. And it's, you know, just fascinating to be a part of it. Like you have been now for some time. I think Michigan's going to be really, really important. I'm not going to put you on the spot, Lavore, but my view is, as a Democrat, we need to nominate the person in 2024 that can beat Trump. That's my criterion. And President Biden's done it once. Mm-hmm. And I think he could do it again.
I do,
so
too.
That's where I am. And again, we won't put you on the spot. I'm a Biden fan. I'll be very candid about that.
I have always been a Biden fan. You know, when he came to Michigan in 2012 multiple times to support the work that I was the Obama state director then. And he became like truly my hero and my best friend in that moment, because he came when others weren't coming because they didn't think they needed to come to Michigan. And he believed in the work that we were doing, and he believed in having that conversation with the voters here in Michigan and how important we are. And I think that's another reason, frankly, he gets it. I think the White House gets how important Michigan is in the full picture of running a presidential campaign. And I think that actually helps us as we want to go early in this process. We'll see.
Before we let you go, Lavora, let's maybe talk just a little bit about the competitive congressional races.
Oh, yes.
We've got four of those here, and we have the battle for control of the legislature. And I don't want to go through race by race or anything, but I just want to get your thoughts on the congressional races and the overall battle for the legislature and how you see that shaping up.
I think that, and here's the thing. I haven't been in Michigan my entire life. I've been here more than 20 years. Democrats have never had the Senate. I think this is the cycle. I think this is the moment we get the Senate, and I'm very excited about it. I think we also get the state house this cycle. They have a terrific program. They've got great candidates. They've got great momentum, and they're working really hard. Both caucuses are. I'm very pleased with the programs that they're running, and we're working very closely with them to get that work done. So I'm predicting legislature for the Democrats.
That's good news there.
The congressional seats, you know, the redistricting means that Dan Kildee is running in a district that does not look like the district that Dan has run and won in before. He is an excellent member of Congress. He's a hardworking candidate. It's going to be a tougher race than he's had, but he's going to win it. Alyssa Slotkin has shown over and over again that she can win a tough race, and she's going to win this one as well. Hillary Scolton, I think is a better candidate than she was 2 years ago. And she was a good candidate 2 years ago. She's running against the Trumpiest of Trumpsters in Mr. Gibbs. I think that she will come out victorious in the third district. And I don't want to forget Marlinga in the 10th. I think we can beat John James for the fourth, third, fifth. I don't know. He runs a lot. I think we can beat John James again in the 10th. I feel good about it. And I think Carl feels good about it too. I'm excited. These are some good races. I love redistricting for giving us races that we can fight to win, that we have a shot at winning. I am so hard running in those gerrymandered districts that we just did not have a shot at. This is a much better set of maps in terms of being able to fight for victories for Democrats. I can't talk about Congress without being disappointed, though, that we don't have a Black member of Congress who's a Democrat going to D.C. That concerns me. And that's something that's on my long list of things that we need to figure out. But I'm excited about the field of candidates we have.
Well, great. And with that, I want to thank you, Lavora, for taking time in an extremely busy time for you to be with us and share all your insights, and wish you the best of luck in the next 7 weeks.
Thank you so much. It was great being with you guys. I'd love to do it again.
We will.
All right.
That's a wrap on this week's chat. Our great thanks to Lavora Barnes for adding her perspective to this week's podcast. We encourage you to send us your questions, comments, and suggestions. Our email is arepublicpodcast@gmail.com.
You can help share the podcast to a wider audience by adding your review wherever you get your podcasts. We love those 5-star reviews.
And if the Republic is still standing, Jeff and I will be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Talk with you next week.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.